an Ironic Media production. Visit us at ironicmedia.com.
That's unusual that he was so aware. And even I remember at an Alzheimer's Association event, you guys got up on stage at the memory walk. You guys were asked to speak, and and he spoke about the burden on you, how worried he was. I'll never forget that.
Yeah, I was just going to say, good memory, Barbara. That was so long ago. But yes, that is what he talked about. And he did things like, while he was still cognizant, every Valentine's Day, you know, he did the classic roses for me. And he set it up so that after he passed, those roses were there for me. And I was just like, what the hell is going on? And he had arranged with my neighbor for perpetuity. She would have these roses for me every Valentine's Day. It's just the gift that keeps on giving with him.
Oh my gosh, that is
so sweet. So sweet, so romantic, so lovely, all of those things,
Dementia Discussions. Here to help and empower our heroic caregivers with knowledge and experience. Dementia Discussions with the caregivers themselves and memory loss professionals. Here to help with 30 years as a geriatric social worker is your Dementia Discussions host, Barbara Hammond.
Hello, and welcome to Dementia Discussions. Today on my show, I'd like to welcome Karen Patterson. Karen, oh goodness, I've known Karen for many years. It must be around 15 years or so. We were just talking about how long it's been. Karen and her husband, Bob, were in a support group through the Alzheimer's Association back then. And it was kind of an unusual group where the person with dementia and their care partner came to a group called the Memory Club. Karen and Bob participated in the Memory Club for 8 sessions. And then we went on to what was called the Graduate Club, Grad Club, and Alumni. And boy, you guys went through the whole series. So anyway, we'll get to that later. Karen, welcome. It's great to have you on the show.
So good to be with you.
So, oh gosh, I knew Bob, your wonderful husband, beautiful man inside and out. But you, from your own words, tell us about Bob.
Well, I would say Bob is the one that taught me that kindness is not weakness in a man. And that was the first time I knew that. Probably every day with him confirmed that. So that was quite a gift that he gave me. Bob was, I think he thought of himself as a scientist. He was an aerospace engineer and loved his work. Oh my God, loved it. When he was about 58, he started saying that work wasn't as fun. And that was really weird because, I mean, he just adored his work, but that it was hard. And at 59, he decided to retire early. He had just been offered a big job with another company in Denver, and he turned it down saying he didn't think he could remember everybody's name. And I was just like, well, of course you can't remember everybody's name initially. And he was just like, no, I can't take that job. So those were my, like, you know, red flags that I didn't exactly recognize, but the behavior did stand out. It was unusual for him. I guess just to say that his job in his last years in aerospace was that he was in director and in charge of quality control for satellite projects. So he was the last eyes on a hundreds of millions of dollars project. I think the pressure of that as his brain was changing was really, really too much. Even though he didn't recognize why exactly, he did recognize that it was more stressful than it was exciting and fun, as it always had.
Yeah, I remember in group, we would talk about him. He was literally a rocket scientist.
Literally, yes. He was such a good man. He had such amazing relationships with everybody that worked with and for him. I noticed, like, with his new assistant, he was annoyed with her that she wasn't reminding him of things that previously he never needed reminding. Like, he would miss a meeting that he was leading and would be angry at her. And so these were just all those kinds of things that my friend, I remember when I would relay some of these to her, she would just say, what is your gut telling you? And I'm just like, something's wrong. Mm-hmm. And of course, I did the classic thing that every wife I know that is in this situation does, is send him to the doctor to talk to the doctor. And his internist basically said, yeah, my dad's an aerospace guy too. And you guys think if you don't remember one thing that you're losing it, you know, you are fine. And we did that for a couple of years until we got somebody to take this seriously.
And he was so young.
And he was young, right. And so, as you remember, I'm sure, so affable and just so easy with conversation. So I think that it did cover up a lot.
So it was hard to kind of diagnose.
It was.
Point. Yeah, I'm sure you ran around for a bit. Yeah.
But there were just so many indicators. Like when he did retire, he was like, okay, I'm going to join the gym with you and we're going to start working out together. And he couldn't figure out how to set up the treadmill. Hmm. It was just like, what? You're asking me to set up a machine, like for you. It was just like such a odd reversal. And yeah, things like that would happen. And I would be like, this isn't right. Or we'd be driving home from the farmer's market in Culver City, the same market farmer's market we'd gone to for years. And he would get a little lost coming home. Like, what is that? Or there would be a yellow flashing to slow down and he would stop thinking it was a yellow light that was going to turn red and there would be people honking behind us. All of the little things that I think most people notice, but it takes a while till they just add enough girth to your thoughts that you go, wait a minute, this cannot be right.
He was finally diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease.
Yes, he was, yeah. You know, did the routine of mild cognitive impairment and then Alzheimer's. Oddly enough, it was a little bit comforting just because I knew it. And then to get it stated by a doctor and confirmed was just like, now we know the devil we have to, you know, deal with. But yeah, I think not knowing is harder.
Right. And yeah, probably a little crazy making for you.
More than a little. Yes. Yeah. Yes. You know, like, he had built a clock that he now somehow couldn't remember how to wind. You know, it was just like, wait, you built that clock. I can wind, you know, you built it. But yeah, it's so all of that.
Validating, finally, confirming, as you
yes,
say.
Yes, confirming, yeah.
Yeah, your suspicions, mm-hmm. absolutely. For and sure. I remember the unusual thing about Bob was that he was so aware of his memory loss and concerned about you.
Yes. Yes, a lot of his energy was devoted to how can I make this easiest on you?
Mm-hmm.
And so that, yeah, that was definitely his focus. I'm sure you heard that many, many times in group because that was definitely his focus. And in fact, we hear that people with Alzheimer's lack empathy at some point, and that never was the case with him. Like, he just seemed to be able to hold on to that aspect of himself. I think it was so core to him.
Yeah, I agree, that's unusual that he was so aware. And even I remember at an Alzheimer's Association event, mm-hmm. you guys got up on stage at the memory walk.
Yes.
Right? You guys
yes,
were asked
absolutely.
To speak and, mm-hmm. and he spoke about the burden on you, how worried he was. I'll never forget that.
Yeah, I was just going to say, good memory, Barbara. That was so long ago. But yes, that is what he talked about. And he did things like while he was still cognizant, every Valentine's Day, you know, he did the classic roses for me. And he set it up so that after he passed, those roses were there for me. And I was just like, what the hell is going on? And he had arranged with my neighbor for perpetuity. She would have these roses for me every Valentine's Day. It's just the gift that keeps on giving with him.
Oh my gosh. That is so
sweet. So sweet. So romantic. So lovely. All of those things. Yeah. That's who he was. And even though I must have told him 20 times, I don't like red roses. I'm getting red roses for the rest of my life, even now that he's gone. But now I really do appreciate them.
Mm-hmm. That is
bring
so
them on.
Sweet. Yeah.
So
bring
sweet.
On the red roses.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's great.
I know.
Throughout that time, kind of bringing you back, what was challenging for you? And it sounds like the fact that he was so smart and forgetting some of the simplest things that you were just talking about. Are there other challenges you remember going back to those days?
I do. I mean, some as simple as, you know, I hear a lot of men in the groups talk about, oh, now they have to take over their wife's duties if their wife is impaired. That's usually cooking and cleaning and those kinds of things. But I had to take on things like backed up toilets, which that was Bob's work, of course. Like, it was just like, not only did I have to take them on, he was the cause of them. Not only could he not fix it, he caused it. I can just remember at times just like cleaning up, trying to fix this toilet and just sobbing. Like, I cannot believe this is my life. You know, like poor, pitiful me having to deal with a toilet. But the truth is, when it was all said and done, I can pretty much fix a toilet. I don't feel poor, pitiful me now. I feel like, well, good, because Bob's not here anymore. And if a toilet goes bad, I have to fix it. So there's that. And it's very clear there's a mouse in my kitchen. It's very clear. Yes. And I mean, that's the kind of thing I would just be like, Bob, I'm leaving the house. Take care of this. You know, like, I don't want to know anything about it. I want to see it. But instead, I'm like setting humanitarian traps and I'm doing, you know, things that I'm just like, I cannot believe this is my life, but it is. And you have to deal with it.
I'm sure you're like, Bob, where are you now?
I so need you. I literally said that out loud. Bob, are you kidding me? What am I supposed to do with this? There's like popcorn kernels all over the floor. Like something's in this kitchen, you know?
Right.
So
it's not me.
Yeah.
Oh,
I know. Yes.
Oh, goodness.
Yes.
So looking back, were there regrets that you had? Anything you thought, oh, maybe I should have, you know, done this differently?
Oh, my God. First of all, I'm Jewish. So yes, I definitely dwell on everything that I could feel guilty about. One of the things that I recall is that Bob and I used to exercise a lot together. And we would take pretty fast walks and just talk. And that was part of our day. And as he became more impaired, his walking changed. He would walk along and talk and then just stop. It would be kind of hard to get him going again. But I was using that time as my exercise time. So I felt annoyed with him that he was stopping because I needed to get my 10,000 steps in, or I needed to have my heart going at this rate. And here was Bob just standing there with no explanation, and I would feel annoyed. One day, I was taking a class at UCLA that was really for caregivers, focusing on meditation, and he was asking what was difficult. And I was saying, this is very difficult for me right now. And he was saying, oh, what if you didn't think of that as your exercise, but you thought of that as just your time to be outside with Bob? It completely shifted everything. It was like, I needed to figure out how to get my exercise in, but it wasn't going to be at Bob's expense for me to, you know, be annoyed with him for, you know, not being able to do what he used to do. So just simple things like that, that seem so trivial, but that when I look back on, like, definitely caused me disharmony, because I'm just like, why did it take me so long to figure that out?
Right.
So
right.
Yeah, it's mostly, Barbara, it's just like little things like that, that you just remember. And what I really, really try to do is to, every time I remember something I didn't do as well as I wish I had, I try to remember something I did really well. And that's my saving grace, is to do that. Because there are moments when you're caregiving somebody with Alzheimer's that bring out the very worst and the very best in you. And when I think about the very best of times, I rose to, you know, things beyond dealing with toilets and mice. I really rose to occasions where I thought, damn, you really did that well. Like, you really came from love in a way that you were never challenged in your life to do before. And so that's kind of the balance that I very consciously seek when I'm remembering this whole process, because Bob has been gone for 5 years now. So at first, it was hard to remember Bob in any other way but impaired. Mm-hmm. And as time goes by, I let all those other memories in, all those lovely, wonderful memories. And with that, I let in the fact that some of my caregiving was really good. And I rose to heights that I wouldn't have been able to rise to if I hadn't been forced to.
I have to highlight that.
Yeah.
It is wonderful, because most people, you know,
yeah, I do.
But, you know, your husband asks you the same question 10 times, and by the end, you're just you've lost it, right?
Yes. Yes.
You feel so bad, so guilty that you just let your husband have it. I'm sure you can relate to this.
I can.
And of course, they've forgotten, but you feel terrible the whole
time. Exactly.
Day,
you know, I don't forget. Yes.
Yeah. You don't forget. You don't forget what you said to him on that walk. Like, come on, this is my exercise. Like, what are you doing?
Exactly.
Yes.
Yes, of course. And you know, something else happened that was really interesting. We know someone in common that you work with. He was a friend of mine for many, many, many years. After he was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, well after Bob was, I would go out to dinner with him. And some of the things that he would do that Bob used to do at dinner that would just like embarrass me, like ask the waitress for the same glass of wine 5 times. But when he would do it, I didn't care. I would just say to the waitress, he's really thinking about that wine. And it was the strangest thing. And then I thought to myself, why did I personalize Bob's Alzheimer's to the extent that I felt embarrassed? I don't feel embarrassed about this friend, not in any way. So that led me to think about this whole thing differently. And it led me, when I talk to people that are caregiving, I relate that to them because that's just an unnecessary complication to the whole thing. It's just an enmeshment that somehow it's reflecting on you that your husband has this disorder in his brain. It's so silly when you can see the bigger picture, but when you're in it, it's very hard. You're very myopic when you're caregiving somebody with Alzheimer's.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's absolutely true. And somehow it does feel like a reflection on you. Like, how did you pick this person to be with?
Right.
He's acting bizarrely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's just incredible. Yeah. How did you pick this person? You picked them for so many amazing reasons.
Right. Years ago. And they weren't like this, of course.
Exactly. Yeah.
But I love that you focus on what you did right, like the things that you did right. You balance it out with the things you did really well.
Love that.
That's a great piece of advice.
And it's survival. Mm. It really is mental, emotional survival for me to go, wait a minute, I did a lot right. Yeah.
I can say that you did a lot right.
Right.
You did.
You're saying it, and then there's my believing it, and they're very different things. And sometimes when you present that you're this caregiver doing all of these things and people say, oh my God, I don't know how you do it, then you can also feel like a fraud because you know that you also had those moments of, come on, let's walk, let's go. You know you had those moments and other people don't know you had them. And so if you don't acknowledge the times that you did really well, then I think you can just misremember how this all went down because it's such an all-encompassing time of life. You know, you talk about taking the good with the bad, or people would say, I'm doing the best I can. I would just kind of think, well, that's not really the best I can do. But as time's gone by, I realized, of course it was the best. I love this man. I'm a good person. Of course I was doing the best I could do. Was it good enough by my standards? No. But was it the best I could do? It was. Yeah.
I'm glad you can look back and feel that way. Yeah. Otherwise, you feel terrible.
And I mean, it's such an irony that you could devote so much of your life to this and then end up feeling terrible about it.
Right.
That just can't be right.
No, that can't be right.
No.
Absolutely. You made the best decisions you could with what you had at the time. So eventually you got help for Bob at the house.
Yes. And that was at the time he was very able. He liked to walk to the senior center that was near our house and play ping pong and had a whole group of friends that he had made there that just adored him and he loved. And so at that point, I had somebody come over a couple times a week and walk with him to ping pong and make him lunch when he got back. And so that was really great. That was like the first time I had taken any time for myself. At that same time, I had a very good friend of mine who said she would like to have him for a couple of hours a week and take him to lunch and give me a break. And that was probably the kindest thing that could have happened for me. I knew her so well. She knew him so well. It was great. Funnily enough, I did learn later. She was over one day and Bob had to go to the bathroom. And I was like, okay, hon, you know, call out if you need any help. And she looked at me and she was just like, he needs help in the bathroom. And I'm like, no, he's fine. He can go to the bathroom by himself. And she said, oh my gosh. She said, all this time I've been going into the bathroom with him and holding his penis while he peed. And I'm like, oh, no wonder he likes it when you come every week. I was just like, you rascal, Bob. Alzheimer's or not, you got that one figured out. We laughed so hilarious. Hard when we realized that Bob was like still figuring out, you know, everything out. Yeah, it was so hilarious. We just looked at each other and we're like, oh my God, you go, Bob.
Oh, clever to the end.
Yes, clever.
Oh, funny. Mm-hmm. So she helped you, which was wonderful.
She did. Yeah. She helped me. It was wonderful. And then later on, when we decided that it was time for him to be in a facility, that wasn't her jam. She wasn't able to do that. She kept saying, I'll go if you go, but I won't go alone because I don't think he remembers who I am. You've heard that a lot from people. I can't Absolutely. Visit them because they don't know who I am. And I'm like, but you know who he is. There'll probably be a familiar ring to your voice. But she just didn't. And then I just accepted that she had a role that was comfortable for her and really worked for all of us. But the next phase didn't work. And I think you have to accept that from your friends as well. Like whatever they can give is going to be helpful.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. So that was her limitation.
That was her limitation. And I was glad she knew her limitation. That was just the end of that part of it.
Right. She was aware of it. And
Absolutely.
It was okay. Yeah.
Yes.
So he ends up going into a facility. And how was that for you?
Oh, my God. Well, first of all, I'll take you back a little bit. He had started going to an adult daycare called Opeka, which I know you're very familiar with. Sarah there. And he loved it. The first time I took him there, he was just like, what are all these old people? I don't belong here. And by about the third time, he was just like, I love it here. And he always called them his homies. These are my homies. And he loved them. And the men in that group would meet and have like a discussion group. And sometimes I would get a picture of them. It honestly looked like they were in a board meeting. I just like all of these lovely men just engrossed in conversation with each other. And he loved that. He really loved that. A couple of years went by with that. He said, I think it's getting time for me. It was in keeping with him. It was still his trying to take care of me that he thought maybe this was the time for him to actually go into a facility. And he said, you know, these are all my homies. I don't know my homies there yet, but I will. And it'll just be like, so now I'm just sleeping there. It'll be just like Opeka, but I sleep there. Took us a couple of months of thinking about that, talking about that, and finally deciding to give that a try. And we did.
That's amazing.
I know. It was pretty amazing. But he's that same guy that, you know, stopped driving on his own. He had a lot of self-awareness about how his brain was changing. And so he went into the facility. I basically camped out there. I stayed there his every waking moment for the first probably 6 weeks. I was there all day. And it was really rough. And at one point he said, I want to talk to you about something. And we sat outside and he said, I want you to know while I'm still able to tell you this, that it's very hard to be here and to not be at home. But, and I'll probably get emotional, but this is all I have left to give you. And I want to give you this. So he really wanted me to accept that. So even though he said it was hard, it was the last means he had of taking care of me. And it was just a lovely, crazy thing that he was able to do. And I needed to accept it because it was, as he said, all he had left to give. And he gave it and I accepted it. Wow. So after a couple months of this, my kids were like, okay, you cannot keep living at this facility. And so we developed a schedule where I would be there 3 days a week. Each of my children would be there for a few hours. And so every day he had somebody from our family spend time with him. That was as much for us as it was for him. I think we all felt like he had that FaceTime. He had hands to hold. He had whatever we could do to support him through that. And that same woman that had been caring for him at home that would walk him to ping pong, I now had go to the facility and spend time every day with him as well.
Oh, so she came around.
She did.
Wow.
She did. After that initial 6 weeks, I hired her to just come there every day.
That's amazing.
It was. And there are so many different ways to make this work. You know, you just, as long as you accept that no matter what you do, it can't be perfect because this is the most imperfect disease that's ever been visited upon any of us. So it can't be perfect, but it can be good. And it can be supportive, and you just have to be as creative as you've ever been to come to some sort of formulation that works.
I'll say. And you guys
yes.
were very creative.
Wow. We were creative, yes. Yeah. I love my children in ways that I always adored my children, but it's just like every one of them is a mensch. Each of them figured out a way to contribute to ease his suffering and my suffering. So we all have that. Now he's passed, but we all know what we did together,
right.
And it's very bonding.
That's great. And
yeah.
You all know that you did your best. And
Absolutely.
As hard as it was, like you were in this hard place together.
Oh.
That's a great story. I got emotional. That's
you got a contact cry off of me. Yeah,
absolutely.
I know. I know. And did he remember that toward the end? I don't know that he did, but I remember it. I'll always remember
absolutely.
It. That when he had the power to lighten my burden, even though it added to his burden, he did it. Yeah.
Amazing. That's
amazing.
And
right?
In his way, he could tell you that. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
I know.
And somewhere along the line, you guys came to Memory Club. So that
yes.
must have been early
yes.
on because he was so articulate. Still.
Very articulate and really figured out early on about support groups that would be the key. We were with you like so early on.
Which is, I think, unusual for a scientist. Would you, like, I
yes.
would think that in his category, like his ilk would think, like, I have life figured out. I really don't need anyone else.
Right. He was that odd engineer that, like, his favorite course at UCLA when he was getting his advanced degrees was this course on love
wow.
that a professor taught that he just adored. And even though he was engineerial and truly had that side to him where he just kept, you know, lists of everything. And, you know, he was very, very organized, but he sought to be enlightened around emotions. I remember early on in the place in our relationship where things were kind of flat, we were kind of taking everything for granted. And I had read about this course at OHI called Flesh and Spirit, which was a couples group about ways to be more intimate. Emotionally, physically, in every possible way. I said for my birthday, that's what I wanted. I wanted him to take that course with me. And at the last minute, he had to cancel because there was like a satellite launch and he had to be there. But what he did was he took that rain check and he did all the arrangements for it when the class repeated. And we went to that class and he loved it. And we ended up being instructors at some point and having groups for couples intimacy. So when this first happened that he got this diagnosis, we decided that we would continue the same ways, the same techniques we had for intimacy. And that was having these couple sessions where we just talked and listened with our hearts. We did that for a good long while. And I think it did help. But one of the things that isn't talked about very much around caregiving with somebody with Alzheimer's when it's your partner is that the whole sexual aspect. All of those years that you build up of intimacy, of what works physically between a couple, the touch wasn't there. It was changed. So then I was just like, okay, work with this. You get to have sex with a stranger. Let's work with this. And, you know, I would try to work with this. Eventually, it became much more, it felt like I was having sex with a child. And that was just that. Actually was what killed it off because that just couldn't work. Sometimes people with Alzheimer's lose their desire for sex. Sometimes it's heightened. There are all these things that happen that I think people are often reluctant to talk about, but that I would like to have in the dialogue because being physical is such an important part of a relationship. And even if it's just remembering to hold hands or to hug, it's so important to not give that up, to stay with that. And I think a lot of that turns into just that lovely affection between people in the same family. One of my daughters, I remember, said, it just feels like he's not her dad anymore so much as just a person in her family that she loves. But the roles really change so much. The roles of father, husband, just are so altered as to be unrecognizable at times.
Yeah. And I think your idea of thinking like, now I'm having sex with a stranger. I mean, it's almost like, oh, I'm having an affair.
Yes.
It's sort of exciting. You
know? Yes, it's sort of exciting. And he doesn't quite know how to touch me, but that's okay. Maybe I can teach him. Right. Of course, he couldn't remember from time to time. But Yes, I did try to play with that for a while I could. I did, for sure. Why not?
Why not?
Yes.
Nothing to lose. Absolutely.
Exactly.
Gosh, yeah. So difficult.
The people I'm closest to in my life now, my friends, my family, went through this experience with us. So it's hard for me to even imagine somebody going into old age that doesn't have Alzheimer's. I just kind of associate that, you know, so I can't even imagine being with somebody that hasn't had Alzheimer's touch their life, because when Alzheimer's touches your life, it changes you. Hopefully it changes you for the better, for the more compassionate, for the deeper feeling part of you. So I'm Alzheimer's all day, every day, because those are the people I surround myself with. And now, since I've transitioned to having support groups, those are the people that I adore.
Karen, you're talking about basically giving back, and you have given back in such a big way. You are a support group leader now and have been, and you're a wonderful leader. I'm so impressed by you, really, I have to say. Like most people, when this journey is over, I think they really let it go and don't, this is not a place they want to stay in. You know what I mean?
I do.
Yeah.
I do.
Not you.
My degree is in human development. The whole first part of my career was around young children. I would do parenting classes, and I directed a nursery school for many, many years. This is just the bookend to that. Now I'm really devoted professionally and personally to this latter stage of life, specifically the latter stage of life when Alzheimer's enters it. So that just feels like I've come full circle. This is the whole of human development of a life. It is definitely a two-way street. I get so much joy out of being in a group of people with Alzheimer's that I know they're going through such tough times, but that just can laugh till they're ready to pee their pants. They just find something. And it made me think about early on, Bob came up with, okay, here's my formula. Every day I'm going to find something beautiful to look at. And we live at the beach, so that was easy. And I'm going to find something delicious to eat. And we always had Haagen-Dazs in the freezer, and that was easy. But the last thing was, I'm going to find something to laugh about. Every time that happens in my group, I think about him, and I think about just how laughter literally eases everything in the body. It's like a meditation. There's nothing but that moment of release.
Absolutely.
And that happens. I'm sure you know how much that happens in groups. Like you're talking about these crazy things, these difficult things, and the next thing you know, you're all laughing.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't make this stuff up.
You cannot make this stuff up. No. Yeah. As soon as you said that, I'm like, okay, I remember, I haven't thought about this in years, but a friend of mine and her sister said, let's go to the movies and bring Bob. And this was like probably mid-stage at this point. And I'm just like, well, okay, let's do it. So we go to a movie. It's the kind of movie where you make reservations for your seat. We just sat down where it was easiest for Bob. And of course, empty theater. Somebody comes and says, you're in our seats. And I'm like, oh no, we just got him seated. Would you mind? And they actually were, yes, we would mind. These are our seats. So I'm like, okay. So we go to, you know, now we have to get him out of that aisle. And so somewhere in the midst of it all, he kind of missteps when we're doing it. And in order to right himself, he grabs onto my friend's sister's sweater and pulls on it and literally pulls it like over her head. And so she's sitting in the movie theater in her bra, and we're just like looking at each other going like, did this happen? How does this happen? We all just started to laugh so hard that, I mean, you just can't make, you're right. You cannot make it up. It was as funny, and we laughed with him, and he was laughing because he could see he had caused quite a commotion. And those are the things that happen. For every tragedy, and God knows there's a lot of tragedies with this, there is the other side to it.
And I would just say, As a professional, I appreciate you. I'm sure the caregivers in your support group so appreciate you. They learn from you. They laugh with you.
Yeah.
We owe you a debt of gratitude. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Absolutely, Barbara. And you were definitely a mentor for me for that. I think it's the most healing choice I could have made. For me, it's the only choice I could have made.
That's a great place to end.
So thank you. Yes.
All right, my friend.
I love you.
I love you too. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
All righty.
Thank you for joining us today on another episode of Dementia Discussions. If you're a caregiver or know someone who's a caregiver that would like to be a guest on the show, please call me at 310-362-8232 or go to dementiadiscussions.net/contact and let me know. It takes courage because not everyone's willing to do that. I would love to have you. Remember that you can follow Dementia Discussions on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and many more. If you listen on Apple Podcasts, it would mean a lot if you would leave a review. For any other information about this podcast, please visit me at dementiadiscussions.net. And please share this podcast with someone you know if you think it may help. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you here again next time on Dementia Discussions.